The most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Hello everyone and welcome to the Generic Live Show. This is the Generic Live Show for the 5th of February 2016. Thanks everyone for joining us. It has been a heavy ride. I have endured all circumstances to bring you this fine episode. So I hope you appreciate it for what it's worth. So we are here once again. Apologies for A, no show last week, and B, a very, 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 very late show this week. I do apologize for that, of course, because technical difficulties. We have a new software, a new broadcasting setup, and I haven't fully wrapped my head around it yet. So I do apologize for the lateness and the audio quality difference in the show. Hopefully it works out all right, though. So hopefully it's working out, and hopefully it has solved most of my problems. Now, I am working on a solution to the webcam stuff as well, because it looks like I am in the bathroom. So hopefully I can get that fixed up. So we are starting 13 past the hour here, but we will get to some serious stories. We'll get to a developing story out of Australia, one of the most breaking stories out of Australia, as well as you know, US politics and all the rest of it. We've got a fun 2 hours ahead. Don't worry about that. We've got a busy show, so we're going to jump straight in without any further ado. Yesterday, the High Court of Australia decided to uphold Australia's right to detain asylum seekers offshore. Huge decision for the Australian High Court yesterday. A majority of front benches throws out challenge to Australia's government powers, raising a prospect of deportation for 267 people, including 72 children from Australia to Nauru. The High Court has upheld Australia's role in detaining asylum seekers in foreign countries, rejecting a challenge in the continuity of offshore processing system. Lawyers for a Bangladeshi woman argued that Australia government has funded, and proceeded to effectively controlled her detention on Nauru, but was not authorised by a valid Australian law and infringed constitutional limits of the government's power. In a decision announced in Canberra on Wednesday, that was 2 days ago, the court found that the Commonwealth contract was authorised by law and under Section 61 of the Constitution. A majority of the full bench found that Section 1988HA of the Migration Act, which passed by Parliament in June last year, allowed the Commonwealth's participation in the plaintiff's detention in a foreign country. The plaintiff was not entitled to the declaration sought, the court said in its majority decision. Most directly, the court's decision will have implementations for the government's power to remove 267 asylum seekers, 39 children and 33 babies, including 39 children and 33 babies who were born in Australia, to Nauru. Which, by the way, is... Where is that? That link doesn't tell us where that is from. Where that place is. I don't know where that place is. The government has given understandings that it will take at least 72 hours notice before removing any asylum seekers involved with the case from Australia. It's in Bangladesh, I'm assuming. keeps referring to a plaintiff being a Bangladeshi woman. The Bangladeshi woman known as M68 in the court document led to plaintiff in the case of 267 asylum seekers was on a boat intercepted by Australian officers in October of 2013 and was detained by Nauru and from February from January 2014 to Fe August 2014 when she was found brought to Australia for medical treatment and subsequently gave birth to a child. Here's where it gets complicated. The Human Rights Law Centre's Director of Legal Advocacy, Daniel Webb, said he had spoken to his client to inform her of the loss. She is now terrified that one night soon, her and her child will be woken up, bundled onto a plane, and left to languish in limbo on Nauru, he said. We will study the details before we make any decision on what next legal steps we have to take on behalf of these very unvulnerable people. Now, here in Australia, and this article goes on, here in Australia, we do have a very, very tough stance on kind of immigration and where that stands. So I think, and you know, I just. I don't, you know, it's these, okay, first of all, these are vulnerable people. These are people who have cleared to come to this country. They have cleared to be here. That's not the issue. The issue is that they have come here and now because of a decision, they are now being held out. Now, I don't know, but I'm not really a I'm not I know the Australian Constitution. I'm not a constitutional scholar by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that if these people are here constitutionally, if that's the case, okay, I'm going to provide two arguments here. If the case is that they are here constitutionally, if they are meant to be here and they are not doing anything wrong, these are vulnerable people. These are people who are meant to be here and they are not doing any harm to the greater good of the people. And but furthermore, should they get kicked out? Well, if they were breaking the Constitution, well, how did they get in the first place? You know, how did they get in here in the first place if they were breaking Australian Constitution? Now they're throwing out the High Court threw out the challenge of government powers raising to protect protest the deportation of 267 people. So. I don't understand. Because they really haven't been, the High Court ruled that we'll go on here. We'll go on this article before we take our break, and it'll be a very, very short break because we are running 10 minutes behind, 10 minutes behind schedule. That was loud. You know, it's. I think that if indeed the High Court. The High Court decision makes the High Court makes a lot of decisions. I just say that. The High Court makes a lot of decisions, and if the High Court decided to that they and the High Court is a bunch of smart people. You don't get to the High Court just by a lark. But what you do get to the High Court for is to have a very, very big power in what how the country's fate is decided, and I think once that you know you kind of have that decision on your hands on who's going to be here and who's not going to be here, that's where it gets a bit fishy. finicky. We will continue to cover this story. There is a lot more to this story, but that's a developing story that we are following here at the GLS headquarters. We'll cover it here. We'll cover it in the next hour as well, because there is a petition going around to keep these people in the country. We'll cover that real quick before we do take our break, because we are technically we're on air for 10 minutes. They are planning to be sent back by the immigration minister, Peter Dutton. That's what the government is saying. The High Court went to appeal that. Now, I just want to say in 30 seconds here, we will get to more of this. We'll actually break down what the court is saying, because a lot of people in this story are just saying loud noises, and that doesn't help anyone at all. But we will continue to cover this story. Sincere apologies for the technical difficulties and the lateness as we continue here on GLS for a Friday. Let me tell you, after the technical difficulties, I'm saying finally a Friday here on GLS. We have just lost. We've lost so many people over the course of 2016 so far, and we've just lost one more. We'll tell you who it is as we continue here on GLS for a Friday. Finally, a Friday. It's 10:23. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us here on a Friday, finally a Friday here on the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. I feel like we're kind of rushing a little bit still, but we are getting there. Like I said, we will cover this in more detail in the second hour, and if we go a little bit over time, I don't really mind at all. But thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. However you choose to consume the show, whether you choose to consume it live or if you choose to consume it on your hard drive, we do appreciate you joining us, because we do appreciate there's lots of shows you can consume live, but you have chosen to consume this show live. Now, we have lost so many talented people over the last 2 months since the year started, but you know, I think it's getting to the point where we've lost so many people now. It's just, I think 2016, and as morbid as this sounds, I think 2016 is where we see a lot of the people that our parents grew up with, and that overflowed into early 30s and late 20s people, and I'm not in that category, unfortunately, start to disappear. The birds in the background, by the way, I want to put this out here. I recorded this at 10 o'clock in the morning, 10 till 12. Birds are really bad today. I do apologize. But the voice of Daffy Duck, Academy Award-winning comedic actor Joe Askley, playing a host of allegedly lunatic characters, passes away at age 63. TMZ reported he died of cancer, announced by his family on Wednesday. The Emmy Award-winning comic actor, who was born in upstate New York, also voiced other legendary Looney Tunes characters, including Elmer Fudd. Astley's cancer in voiceover began as an impressionist. He broke it big in Hollywood when he was hired by Warner Brothers in the late 1980s. He succeeded the famed impressionist Mel Blanc. Following his death in 1989, Askley also provided voiceovers for Marvin the Martian, Plucky Duck on Looney Tune Adventures, Grandpa Lou Pickles on Rugrats, and the ghost Casper. He was the narrator on the television documentary series Murder Comes to Town, which aired on the Investigation Discovery Network. And say goodbye to Askley. Here is, I think, Kids WB, I think it is. Why is nothing working today? Ah, it's so frustrating. Well, you know. Anyway, that's not important. The important thing is we say goodbye to him, and I think there was another one breaking before the show went live. I think, yeah, the Earth, Wind, and Fire found that Mercer White died at 64 well, when he was found dead in his home. That's unfortunate. We're losing so many fantastic people. Like I said, I think 2016 around it, unfortunately, when, you know, get on, and it's world without. I have a real soft spot for Taffy, trust me, and sad to see less ducky. Do your best Daffy Duck impressions today, everyone. As you know, as you always remember this day as Daffy Duck Day. We continue here on GLS for a Wednesday. We're going to get into it here. We're going to get all political. We're going to get down to the nitty gritty of what happened this week in American politics as the race for president heats up. We're gonna analyze that for you. So we continue here on GLS. And also, by the way, another thing we might mention in there is we might try in the asylum seeker story. And if we have a bit of time, we might continue to break that down as well. It's all coming up as we continue here on GLS 1031. You've finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us here on a Friday. Oh, yes. It's a Friday good tune to get you in the mood for the weekend. You've made it through another week. Well done. You've only got hey, but we got good Friday morning vibes for you. Listen to this. I, by the way, and I like to tell embarrassing stories about myself on radio because that's fun. You know, it's what I do. I do for a living. I like to make fun of myself. If nothing else in life, you can get a bit of self-humor in. Good Friday morning vibes, by the way. I was. If this person is listening, you are my savior. You've put a spring in my Friday morning step. And by the way, this we will get to politics. We'll get to news. We'll get to everything. But I just want to say this. I was walking to work yesterday. And this put me in a good mood for a Thursday. Nothing puts me in Thursday. But I was doing a fill-in day shift, actually, which is quite strange for me. But I was walking down the street, with my cup of coffee. I made some coffee before heading to work. 7:30. Out of nowhere, I was walking down the street and suddenly got like a wolf whistle out of a window. I don't know if they were someone I knew. I don't think so. They didn't confirm it later on. So I'm pretty sure that it was a stranger giving me a wolf whistle down the street at 7:30 in the. That song played in my head. Could you imagine it? Me walking down the street and a bit of that playing down my head as I'm finishing my trek to work. And by the way, it's not cold here at the moment. It's like, I'm going to say in Celsius because this is an Australian radio show, goddamn. And it is like 30 degrees Celsius at like that time of the morning. What was about that? But yeah, still really, really warm. And I got a wolf whistle. So that put me in a great mood for a Thursday morning. And I hope that song has put you into a good mood for a Friday because it's finally a Friday. Anyway, so. And you know who else is saying finally a Friday? All of the men and women who had to go on to the Iowa caucus this last week. The race for the election has officially started. It has started. It has. You have your nominees. No, you don't have your nominees. What's the word I'm looking for there? You have your candidates. You have your candidates. You have your Donald Trumps, you have your Ted Cruzes, you have your Marco Rubios. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to break this down into who comes where. And good friend of the program, CJ Boat, I know it's probably listening. Hello, CJ. Yes, by the way, Jim Gilmore did go to Iowa, by the way. And it was not a good going by our very own Jim. By the way, we said this on the air in the biggest stories of 2015. Who, by the way, you can catch that on the feed. Do apologies for the prediction show that got lost. So I don't know who has that show. So it's lost. So that's unfortunate. So what was I saying? Oh yeah, Jim Gilmore got a grand total of 40 votes, allegedly. So, that's that is what that is. So, it's interesting to say the least. So, let's break this down on who won on both sides of the political aisle. Let's start with the Republican side first, because it's a lot more interesting over that side of the political aisle. Ted Cruz, of course, not of course, but won the caucus. He won 20. He garnered 27% of the vote. I mean, in second place is Donald Trump, who scored 23% of the vote. Rubio scored 23.1% of the vote. There are the three main candidates, I think, for this race, because. It depends, actually. You know what? I shouldn't say that. It should depend on the next two primaries, which I believe are New Hampshire and South Carolina, if my political knowledge is up to scratch. Then we kind of go down from then. Ben Carson, the neurosurgeon, got 9.3% of support. Rand Paul got 4.5%. Jeb Bush got 2.8, Carly Fiorina got 1.9, John Kasich got 1.9, Mike Huckabee got 1.8, Chris Christie got 1.8, Rick Santorum got 1%, and Jim Gilmore 0. Interestingly enough, though, let's look at the delegate breakdown, because I think there's a lot to say in, well, the way that the delegates are broken down here. I think delegates are really interesting on who has kind of potential for this. So Ted Cruz scored 8 delegates, Donald Trump scored 7 with Rubio, Ben Carson scored 3, Ron Paul 1, Bush 1, Fiorina 1, Kasich 1, Huckabee 1. Want to point out that since the caucus, we people on the Republican side have hence dropped out. Excuse me. Ron Paul, who has dropped out, who garnered 4.5%, he has dropped out. Mike Huckabee has dropped out, who scored one delegate with 1.8% of the vote. He has dropped out. Rick Santorum has also dropped out. He did not score any. He has dropped out 1%. My biggest question is, who scores those delegates? I want to know who scores those people. I want to know who scores those delegates? Where do they go? And that would be a massive influence for whoever gets those. That's quite a lot. I know that's only two delegates, but still, that may have a huge impact. That might bump Cruz up to 10 delegates. That might bump Trump up to 9 delegates. Delegates are a lot to say. Okay. On the other side, on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton nailed biter on this side of the political aisle. 49.9% of the vote. Bernie Sanders, 49.6%. Delegates, though, 23-21, Clinton and Sanders respectively. Martin O'Malley, of course, is now, not of course, is now dropped out, but has dropped out, who only garnered 0.6% of the vote. He has dropped out. He did not score any delegates for the caucus. Now, we have a really, really interesting article here from NPR. NPR, It's All Politics. They identify how six things that explain how it happened in Iowa. A huge turnout did not, there was a huge turnout. I think it broke all records. There you go, 186,000 Republicans caucused on Monday night, which is a bump up 65,000 than last 4 years ago. So, according to entrance poll, though, 45% of GOP voters said it was their first caucus, and of those, 30% voted for Trump. A large chunk ended up splitting between Cruz and Rubio. Five. So they obviously were split. They were obviously convinced otherwise once they got into the caucus. They kind of got their minds changed once they entered that caucus room. So it's interesting the effect that the caucus has on a voter. On the GOP side, it was a three-way wait for evangelical voters. Got Cruz, Rubio, and Trump. That's who they mentioned here in this article. Cruz, though, the number of voters identified them as born again Christian, 7 points from 4 years ago, 57 to 64. That was my phone going off. Stop that. And those voters captured Cruz 34%. So 34% of the, what would that be, 64% voted. Trump was their second choice with 22, and Rubio was 20, scored 21% of the evangelical vote, which is. Ground games and retail politics still matter. Both Cruz and Rubio ran controversial Iowa campaigns, going to coffee shop, pizza ranch, restaurants, and county meetings. Press the flesh and woo voters over to your side. Both senators, their sophisticated get out the vote operations with modeling and targeting. Cruz even brought so many volunteers to the state, they rented out dorms and dumped Camp Cruz. Rubio took to the air in the final days, running a 30-minute version of his stump speech statewide. Trump, meanwhile, did a kind of at arm's length campaign in Iowa. So there you go. Rubio peaked late at just the right time. The Florida senator had a strong debate last week, especially without Trump on the stage, after Trump boycotted the debate with Fox News. Meanwhile, Cruz was the target of his rivals in Trump's absence because he would have been acting like the front runner. The equation could be to Rubio's peak at just the right time. Of the 35% of voters that said that they decided in the last few days, 30% went with Rubio, 25% to Cruz, Trump with 14%. Among 64% that had made up their minds earlier, Trump and Cruz both garnered 30% each. Sanders, over to the Democratic side for just a second. Sanders could not replicate Barack Obama's 2008 youth correlation, just scoring 18% of the vote that came from 17 to 29-year-olds. Among these, that's who came out to vote, 22%. Among those, Sanders dominate 84-14. Good news for Clinton that 60% of the caucus goers were aged 45 and over, and so she carried that much easier. Among the voters 65 and older, Clinton had a more 2-1 advantage. Most Democratic voters had attended the caucus before, just 44 saying that there was their first time at the rodeo, down from 57 8 years ago. Sanders had a 22-point advantage. Clinton, meanwhile, won 56% of the vote that said that they were returning to the caucus by a 24-point. And finally, Clinton still has a problem with liberals. But what did Sanders do that brought in more liberal voters to worry for him? 28% of voters described themselves as being very liberal. That's a 10-point jump from 2008. Sanders won 19% of the vote. Clinton had a 6-point edge with the 40% of voters that described somewhat liberal. Her real strength was with the middle-of-the-road Democrats. Unfortunately for her, that share significantly dropped from this year. 28% of their votes identified themselves as moderate, 12 down from 2008. She had a 23% edge on Sanders on that, though. So that is that. That's how that broke down. Now let's, in the couple of minutes that we have left here in this segment, let's break this down on what this means next. Where do we go from here? Now let's. I should have prepped this earlier. I have a real history of things breaking on this show today. Let's have a look at some of the polls heading into New Hampshire. Because I think... Okay, here we go. So, in New Hampshire, Trump 32.5, Rubio 14.3, 12. Oh, okay. Kasich 11, Bush 10. That's interesting. That is really interesting. Nationally, though, Trump 33, Cruz 20. Sorry. That is interesting. Yeah, whoa, okay. Sanders, though, New Hampshire 56.7 for Sanders, 37.2 for Clinton. Martin O'Malley still has 2.5%. Which you might think that is tiny, but that could break a tie. Trust me. That could break a tie. Interesting though that Rubio is taken in second in New Hampshire. I think if Rubio takes in second in New Hampshire, that he's got a bright future ahead of him if he does indeed take second. Down so much. I think if he takes second in New Hampshire, I think he's got a lot more going for him. As we continue here on GLS 4A Friday, finally. Finally, it's a Friday. You know it, I know it, and we all know it. Hey, you know New Zealand? A lot of Australians are over to New Zealand. Why? We'll tell you why as we continue here on GLS for a Friday, 10:50. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us here on a Friday. I was about to say Thursday. I've got that wolf whistling story in my head. So thanks for joining us here on a Thursday with Dale Campbell here on the Generic Live Show. Hey, you can check me out on Facebook if you want. I'm on Faces. You can just search me, Dale Campbell. I'll probably come up. Or you can go to facebook.com/Dale Murray Campbell, all one word or lowercase, D-A-L-E. MURRAYCAMPBELL. That'll come, longest Facebook URL in history, I know, but that will come up with my Facebook page. We're going to be doing a little bit more with that. We have a lot of stuff to cover on the show. I might put up stuff like that. There's works with new. Anyway, I can't announce too much quite yet, but we've got some plans in the works for the Facebook page. If you are so inclined to do that. Anyway, so New Zealand and Australia and New Zealand have had the biggest rivalry, I think, since the convicts came over to Australia. But it turns out that a lot more people are moving from Australia to New Zealand than vice versa for the first time in 25 years. New Zealand has experienced its first net increase in migration from Australia since 1991, according to new statistical data New Zealand has experienced its first net increase in migration from Australia since 1991, according to data statistics from New Zealand. Last year, 25,273 moved to New Zealand from Australia, where 24,504 moved from Australia to New Zealand. Break from historical trend of New Zealand losing numbers of residents to Australia. Go. The majority of people moving in each direction are New Zealand citizens. However, the number of New Zealand citizens moving to New Zealand after living in Australia is still lower than the number of New Zealand citizens leaving for Australia. This means that a net increase in immigration from Australia to New Zealand has mostly been likely to do New Zealand citizens returning, but also Australians and citizens from of other countries moving to New Zealand. Statistics New Zealand analyst Melissa McKenzie said that migration was influenced by many factors and was hard to predict. Quote, that makes it hard to say for sure whether or not we see an annual gain in New Zealand citizens migrating from Australia to New Zealand, she said. Quote, there have been times in the past where there were a small net gain in New Zealand citizens in Australia. Most recent years were ending in July 1991 and January of 1984. In the December 2015 month, the New Zealand's migrating from Australia to New Zealand did not outweigh those moving from Australia for the first time since December of 1990, unquote. In 2001, the Australian government announced that New Zealand citizens were required to apply for and be granted a permanent visa if they wish to gain access to social security payments, obtain Australian citizens, or sponsor their family members for permanent residence. Dr. Anna Boucher from the University of New Zealand said New Zealand's more leaving to applications are posed on them in Australia. Reserve Bank of New Zealand Governor Graham Wilhelm highlighted last week that the growth in the country is expected to increase in 2016 as a result to continued strong net immigration tourism and a solid pipeline of construction activity and a lift in business and confidence. I think that is a fair point. And I know a fair few people who have moved here from New Zealand, and they say that yes, there are tough laws imposed on them here in Australia in comparison to those placed on them in other areas as well. And it's not fair, you know. They're neighbors. Everybody needs good neighbors. As we continue here on GLS for a Friday, we are in our groove now. Let's in our groove, and we shouldn't talk so much. We are going to continue. We actually are going to give a full segment to this story, asylum seeker story, and there has been a hashtag spurred out from it. And I'm going to go on my rant about hashtags and social media. We have a busy second hour for you. It's 11 o'clock.